Hello, and welcome to What is Wrong with Hiring, the podcast where we talk about why hiring people and getting hired in tech are both absolute nightmares. I'm Laura Klein. I'm a design manager who hopes to be a hiring manager again someday in the future. We'll see.
And I'm Amy Santee, a career coach for UX professionals who, frankly, I'm just making it all up as I go along.
Oh, I wasn't aware that we were supposed to admit to that, but yes, agreed. Hard same. Please be advised that this podcast may contain drinking, swearing, screaming into the abyss, pretty much like most podcasts.
Today, we have our third listener request grab bag episode. Thank you to everyone who submitted a question for the show. And we do plan to continue doing listener requests every now and then. So please send us all of your burning questions about the ridiculous state of hiring in tech. And before we get started, Laura, where the heck have you been lately?
I want to come up with something that makes me sound mysterious and like I've been secretly spying or, I don't know, faked my own death. Something interesting, but really all I've got is I've been incredibly lazy, even more so than usual. Sorry, but I hear that you've been having good conversations with other... Sorry, you've been cheating on me with other co-hosts.
I guess if you want to put it that way, you did say just do whatever you want. So
I did. Yeah. But, I mean, one of the great things about being lazy is just being like, hey, this is yours now. Go do something interesting with it. So I've really enjoyed listening to you chat with the other folks, which doesn't mean that I'm not occasionally going to come back and answer some questions because I like
Looking forward to this.
Yeah, I like talking into mics. What can I tell you?
All right, let's go ahead and get started with our questions. We have several to cover today. Laura, I have a question for you from a UX/product researcher and manager. They say, I'm damn good at what I do and haven't had an interview since last summer after being laid off in May. Oof. The latest wisdom I was given is, it's useless to apply on LinkedIn and Indeed, and you have to use your network. Except my network has no roles, and when they've referred me, it went nowhere. I'm starting a retail job on Monday that pays peanuts, but it's better than no money currently coming in. What are people like me supposed to do?
Ugh. I wish that I had an exciting, perfect answer here that would solve this problem. I don't. I'm hearing it from a ton of people. First of all, I'm very happy that you're still at the, like, I'm damn good at what I do stage. That's great. Keep that. You are. I believe you. And this is not about you. This is about the whole system just sucking. And there's just so many great people out there right now. What I will tell you is this. Keep going back to your network. Sometimes what happens is you let your network know, hey, I'm looking, da, da, da. And then they're like, oh, yeah. And then they tell you about whatever is available right then. And then you still know that you're unemployed, but they don't necessarily know 6 months later because not everybody in your network keeps tabs exactly on you. I know that I'm the center of everybody's universe, but you know, maybe sometimes you just have to like remind people, hey, still looking, or hey, looking again. My favorite is, hey, I'm going to have an opening next month. You should let me know if you know of anything now. The other thing that I will say is I have heard from some friends, if you are in the US, government jobs apparently have not slowed down and in many cases have ramped way up. There are some great people to follow on LinkedIn. Christian Crumlish is one of them that I know, and Sid Harrell, I think last year or the year before, wrote a book about getting into government as a designer or product manager, researcher, that kind of stuff. Government still hiring, but hires weird, so it's worth reading the book or following Christian or some of the other folks like Sid Harrell to learn more about that. Lisa Welchman also does civic design related. Anyway, everything will turn around. I don't know when because my crystal ball is broken. So, but I'm sorry you have to take retail. I really am. I've done it. It's a hard job. Please don't let that discourage you. I know that it makes it even harder because then you're exhausted and discouraged. But keep trying, keep going. I wouldn't say it's useless to apply on LinkedIn or Indeed or those kinds of things, but do you have any better suggestions? I know you talked to a bunch of people who were looking for stuff.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I just want to say that thousands of people are going through this. Thousands of people in design, tens of thousands of people in tech across all kinds of roles. And that's the frustration I see and hear a lot is like, what can I be doing differently? Why are all of these things not working? Why is it taking me so much more effort and time? Why am I not getting as many responses as I'm used to? I have all of my stuff together. My resume is great. I'm networking. Like, what's going on? And the fact of the matter is, it is the market. It's not you. It is the market. You're doing what you need to do. You're networking. You have your portfolio together. You're practicing interviewing. You're building up skills, like whatever it is that you're doing to make yourself a competitive candidate in this tight market. And that is literally all you can do. There's nothing else to control about the market or what's going on the other side of the hiring process. And to this person's point, there are not a lot of jobs out there within their direct networks. And to your point, Laura, maybe there will be eventually. And I have seen a really interesting, I will say, qualitative uptick in people hiring for new positions in the past few weeks. I don't want to conclude at this point that, oh, the market's going back up, everything's going to be great, right? There's still a lot of layoffs and hiring freezes. And so that's a good thing. It's a good sign, but I'm cautiously 5% optimistic at this point. So think about what you can control. And yeah, absolutely cold applying works. I know this because I follow a lot of recruiters on LinkedIn. They look at applications that come through their job portals. And Laura, you mentioned reminding people that you're looking. Remind people directly, remind people with a LinkedIn post. Hey, here's what I'm looking for. Open to work. Turn the open to work banner on. So yeah, I think all of these are good ideas. And tech jobs exist in all industries, government, nonprofits, industry, right? So it's not just tech. It's not just product companies. It's any sector or industry that needs tech workers.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just keep trying. People are hiring. It's just that there are a lot of people applying to each job. Speaking of which, that brings us to our next question, which is extremely related. And that is, when hundreds, if not thousands of people have applied in just a few days, should you even bother? What do you think? Mm.
Absolutely. So there's a couple things here. When we see a job posting on LinkedIn, it will show the number of applicants, supposedly. And in fact, that number is inaccurate for a couple of reasons. The main one being that the number of applicants includes the number of clicks over to the company website. So that is part of the tracking for that number. So it doesn't mean that all of those people have actually applied. And not all of these hundreds or thousands of people are qualified. Again, following recruiters who do this stuff day in and day out and can share the behind the scenes of how all of this works, I tend to see them say that about 20 to 30% of applicants for jobs are qualified. And what that means is they meet the essential qualifications, they meet most of the items on the list, and they've actually read the job description. They're not like mass applying just to anything that sounds remotely related to what they can do, right? So keep in mind that the number of people that it shows who have applied does not reflect the actual number of people, and the number of people who have applied are not necessarily all qualified for the job. So to answer the question, yes, it's absolutely worth it.
20 to 30% seems wildly optimistic in my experience. Back when people were still hiring, barely, I remember going through 200 to 300 applications for a mid-level design job and finding maybe five people that I wanted to interview. And granted, as we just discussed, way more talent out there right now. A ton of people got laid off. I'm sure that in the same thing, I might get 1,000, you know, applications, and maybe there are 50 people that I want to hire. And that's always tricky because like it's still 50 to one, you know, I mean, assuming everybody is equally qualified, which in that 50, which is also not true, but the 50 is still way too many to even interview for just the first round. But given that, I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who apply for things who do not have one of the qualifications, much less most of them or all of them. If you really do qualify, that probably puts, I mean, at least in my experience, that puts you into the top 10% at least. You might get lucky. I think it's worth doing. It's also, like I said, worth not getting too hung up if you don't get the call, because again, even if there's 20 people who are qualified, I can't do a first round with 20 people. I might do a first round with 5 people. And if I find somebody great, I'm going to hire them. So
yeah. And who knows what's going on? Maybe they got so many applications that needed to close it in 24 hours. That happens. There are internal candidates. Yeah. It's like, we have to put this out. So we already have someone in mind internally. We, according to policy, need to interview people. That's definitely a thing. It could be that this one candidate had this one thing on their resume and the hiring manager was like, yep, that's the person. It could be so many things and we don't know. And that's, I think keeping this in mind can also help us separate out the personal from the systemic, like the personal from all of the other things that we can control, and hopefully allow ourselves to separate out our value as humans and our expertise as professionals from all of these other factors.
Yeah. But given that, if you see 200 people have applied, that might be 200 people who are all exactly perfect for the job, and they may have gone through the entire application process on that terrible ATS, and all of that may be true, or more likely, 90% of them were just randomly clicking on buttons and didn't even finish the process, or did finish the process but have zero experience, or have 1 year of experience when it's asking for 10, which I've seen, or all sorts of things. Give it a shot. I wouldn't say put all of your efforts into every single one of them. Give it a shot.
Yeah. Be selective.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. I appreciate your work and conversations around the UX research industry. As an early career researcher, most companies seem to be preferring to hire junior researchers as contractors to reduce costs. In addition to substantially lower pay and fewer, if any, benefits, contractors do not get access to training, mentorship, or professional development. Is this the edge of a future bubble for lower quality mid-senior level researchers? If this observation is accurate, how will this affect the future of an already turbulent industry?
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything that we do, basically this happens every time we have a downturn, right? The first people to get cut are the junior folks because, hey, suddenly I can get somebody with 5 years of experience for an entry-level position, which sucks for everybody, honestly, because that person with 5 years of experience doesn't want to be doing the UX research coordinator note-taking role necessarily, and will leave at the first at their first possible chance, and they absolutely should. So it's bad for me, the hiring person. It's bad for the person who's in a job that maybe they did already and aren't getting paid enough for. And it sucks for the person who would love that job and be really good at it and be able to start to learn the industry and get better. And they're the next person with 5 years of experience who is going to go and take that mid-level or senior role. And yeah, it's bad for the whole industry. Is it accurate? Like I said, it happens every time there's a downturn and people can get more qualified people for cheaper. I don't know the answer to it. I wish it didn't happen. I think one thing to keep in mind is that a lot of conferences and classes have lower tiers or just scholarships for people who don't have jobs. So you can go to things. I think the Rosenfeld Media conferences often have either cheaper tickets or free tickets for some folks who are unemployed. I was just checking out Indy Young's classes. Indy Young, if you don't know her, is spectacular. She's been around for quite some time and is an excellent person to listen to on all things design and research. And her classes, I believe, all have a much lower tier for people who are unemployed. So you can get this stuff often for cheaper. So it's not like you don't get any access to training. You just don't get it paid for by your company, which sucks, and you should, and I wish you could, but it does exist. There are places that will offer mentorship for folks who don't have, full-time jobs.
Yeah, and lots of people on LinkedIn, ADP lists, love to offer free mentoring sessions. So there are definitely some good resources out there. There are several UX coaches who focus on UX research specifically. Even if you don't have a bunch of money to invest in a coaching engagement long-term, it can help to sometimes set up a session or two to talk about priority areas for career development, job search, that sort of thing. And one other thing I just want to touch on real quick is I'm seeing so many jobs switching over to contract roles for all levels. not just entry, not just early career, mid-career, people who have been working in big tech companies for a few years, right? And the wages for those are definitely, they've been stagnant for, I don't know, several years now, especially with the high level of people coming into UX, design, research, and other types of roles. But the wages just tend to be low. And yeah, it's an unfortunate reality of what's essentially the gig economy for tech workers, right? You get paid not a lot of money for really important expertise and don't get any of the other benefits. Definitely happening to a lot of people.
On the upside, I spent a lot of years as a freelancer doing better than I would have if I had a full-time job. So when you get more senior, it's a little bit different calculus because you can go in and you can sell your time for quite a bit per hour. But again, harder in this market, obviously. Also, Amy, don't you have some materials for free or cheap or less? If you can't afford full-on coaching from you, I believe you have some materials available.
Yeah. I do. Yeah, I have a Gumroad shop with some tools and frameworks and resources for job search strategy. And I also have tons of free resources. If you go to my website, amysanti.com, and click on resources, lots of recordings of events that I've done around different types of professional materials, job search stratcasts, articles I've written. So lots of free resources there. And I, of course, do coaching engagements of all kinds to help people with these different areas. Thanks, Laura, for helping me plug my services.
There you go. Hey, I'm just trying to help everybody out here. All right. Otherwise, you'll stop talking to me. You'll make me pay. All right. Let's look at the next question. What do we got? What are some ideal UX research adjacent careers, preferably with similar salaries? Yeah, I'd like that too. For those who are considering making a shift due to still being laid off after over a year of searching, what skills do we have as UXRs that would make us well positioned for other career options? One idea that comes to mind is being a therapist or a teacher, both of which are in demand. Mm. What do you think, Amy?
We need therapists, we need teachers, but of course the educational and healthcare infrastructure of our country, at least in the US here, is a piece of shit. And so those are not jobs where you can make a lot of money or not be super stressed out or have to deal with all kinds of things. So there, of course, are pros and cons to any kind of role. Similar salaries, right? Like similar to what? Similar to $300,000 a year at Google, similar to $110,000 at some mid-sized product company. That's part of what we're having to do here is get a reality check on the depression of wages. Those are going down. We've been used to making a lot of money over the past decade or so, and things are changing. Going back to what we were just discussing about contract roles, it's happening to full-time roles as well. That said, if you think about the purpose of a UX researcher or the skill set, it's let's understand what's going on at the intersection of users and the product and the technology and the business and make sense of it and help improve all of those things, right? And so you could take a inventory of all of your projects, all of your experience over time, your skills, do a skills assessment, like hone in on what are the things I really like to do? What am I really good at? What do I not like to do? And start there to go forward in identifying how those things might be related to other roles. And I think there's some pretty obvious ones like being a product manager. If you have the product and business and design acumen, and you've worked in this space for enough time, that could be a place to transition into. Another idea here is you don't have to do just one thing.
Yeah.
So you can do UX research projects, freelance or consulting as they come around. You can get some new training in other areas. Maybe you go more in the direction of data science. So think of the extensions of this type of work. Program managers, which researchers, designers, really anyone in UX is pretty skilled at managing complex ongoing projects with a lot of moving parts and a lot of stakeholders. So think also outside of the technical skills and look at the broader collaboration and communication type skills as well.
I was thinking also, you mentioned the quant stuff. I was thinking of business analyst type jobs or other types of research, depending on if you're really digging deep into specific research areas quantitatively or qualitatively. Also, have you considered being a thought leader?
I think you mean a thought fluencer TM.
Yeah, I did mean a thought fluencer TM, TM, TM. I'm sorry. I never use my own branding. Yes.
You know, I want to add one more thing, which is content creators, and I am not a content creator. I create content as part of my work, but I am not a content creator. That's a person who 100% goes into creating content as their main source of income. And it's not easy. There's a lot of work, but that is definitely a thing that many tech workers and UX people have gone into. And I know a lot of folks like that who enjoy it and make good money off of it. The other idea I want to add is start your own business. And there are startup costs, there are certain risks involved, and again, pros and cons. But I often meet people who work in tech and they're like, I really don't want to do this anymore. I would love to be doing this totally, completely different thing. And it's okay. Is that an option for you right now? Or can you plan for that? Look at me. I quit UX in 2020 or something and went into coaching and built a coaching practice. And I've been able to employ so many of my skills and experience from my work into this practice. And just my interest in running a business and previously being a consultant running a business. So I would say explore entrepreneurship as well, potentially as it relates to something else you enjoy doing outside of tech.
I have one other weird suggestion. And this is going to apply to a small subset of you, but stick with me here. Consider something in sales. I know that sounds very weird, especially because user research is explicitly very much not about selling things. Like that is, I think it is drilled into all of us who have done any kind of user research. Like we are not trying to sell people on the ideas. We are trying to understand their needs and their pain points. And you know what? As somebody who has sold shit and also done a lot of user research, you know what's really helpful in selling things to people? Understanding what they actually want. I know that sounds bizarre, but understand, like really being able to make a connection with a person and understand what their needs are makes you a phenomenal salesperson. Now, I will say this. I think for a lot of us that kind of get a little maybe squicked out by that, I think there are places that you can go that have the kind of sales departments that are going to be like, no, we want to understand what they need and help the people and sell to people that we can help. And maybe not to people, like you don't have to lie to people to sell them things. You have to figure out what they need and then figure out what you have. And if what you have will help them, you can convince them that's what they need. That works for everybody involved. I don't have any problem with sales, generally speaking, when it's done that way. Keep that in mind. I know a lot of people are immediately going to go like, eh, but it's not... You might be great at it, is what I'm saying. The funny thing is, some of the people that I've known in sales who have learned user research, if they could get past the selling part, were great at user research because they were so used to just talking to people and making a quick connection and getting information from them. And they were like really interested in other human beings and they wanted to know more about them. And the ones who have that kind of mindset were good salespeople and also were pretty good at user research. So it doesn't have to be wildly different.
This has been a huge part of the essence of running my business.
Oh, yeah. And also if you're an entrepreneur, you're a salesperson. So there you go. Yeah. You also do marketing.
I do marketing. I have to sell my services. I came from UX. Like it 100%. And I will say I have thought of sales. It would have to be a certain kind of product. I don't know what it would be, but it's definitely crossed my mind.
Yeah. Pays well. It can pay well. Depends on how good you are at it, I guess. That's one of the nice things about it is it pays as well as you sell things. So.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next question. In the past, it seemed like companies wanted UX designers to be able to also do some UX research. Now there is a pretty distinct split between designers and researchers in most organizations. How do you think skill sets around strategy will evolve with this? How desirable will it be for designers and researchers to legitimately perform strategy functions? I've seen some new hybrid UX/strategy roles.
I never know what UX strategy is. I think there's like 73 different definitions of what UX strategy is. UX strategy can be like how we do user experience design in this company, or it can be like what should we be building, which is often like a product thing, or it can be what do users need. So I'm going to say this. the split between designer and research is real at larger companies and is less real at smaller companies. And one of the things that we're seeing as all companies shrink and we lose a whole bunch of researchers, we are seeing more hybrid roles. Like right now, everybody who works for me is a hybrid designer researcher. That's what I, you know, grew up doing. I did my own research for many years and continue to do so. And so do the people who work for me right now, because that is what we have. Would we love to have a dedicated user researcher? Yes, that would be marvelous. And I can't wait to be able to hire one someday. But so I would say hybrid roles still exist. The split roles still exist. Totally depends on the company. Strategy, anytime you see strategy, ask them what the hell they mean, because it could literally mean anything. And people will tell you, no, the definition of UX strategy is blah, and they are lying to you. There is no single definition of it. I've read a bunch of UX strategy books, and they're all different. Hopefully what it means is we understand what users need, and we actually get to like chime in when it comes to figuring out what the hell to build next. That's just user research to me. That's just user research that actually gets listened to. All right, let's move on to our next question. I'd love some discussion about why companies are passing up on candidates who could do a great job at the moment and occasionally not even finding anyone for the position, preferring to extend the process in search for the, quote, perfect candidate who may not actually exist. It seems to me that companies are getting cold feet about all things hiring and don't have any very good hiring processes. I think you just answered your own question. Amy, yeah, what do you think?
That last part is not new. Yeah. Don't have good hiring processes. A lot of places don't. Hiring has always been something we could talk about what's wrong with it, right?
Like, yeah, we have a whole podcast about it, it turns out, and we are barely scratching the surface.
Yeah, it's gotten way worse. Timelines, bringing people through the entire process, getting their spirits up, getting their hopes up. Oh yeah, like I'm so excited. I think I'm going to get the offer. No, sorry, we went with someone else and no. And
or nobody, or we went with nobody because we changed right. The whole point of the job.
Exactly. I hear of a lot of jobs getting pulled. We decide at the last minute that we can't afford this or we don't need this role or whatever, right? That seems to be happening a lot. Managers have a lot of people to choose from. And I'm not in the mind of a hiring manager who is approaching it in this way of looking at way more resumes than what they probably need to, spending like weeks and months talking to all kinds of people. Like, I don't know enough about that. But from the outside, it doesn't seem to make sense because it costs money and time and delays things moving forward the longer it takes to hire people. From the outside, I'm like, yeah, why are they doing this? But there's probably a lot of constraints happening too. Lots of things changing inside of companies that we're not really privy to. Laura, what do you think? Like, why, if you put yourself in the shoes of someone who's like, gosh, I can't decide, there's so many people, blah, blah, blah. Like, why is that happening?
I don't think that's quite what's happening generally. I think that two very distinct things that are happening depending on the level at which we're talking about. If it's somebody at a lower level or entry level, mid level, and then suddenly they don't hire somebody for it, there's an excellent chance that there was some fuckery at the company that, oh, suddenly that project is no longer, like something happened, right? Like they were told they could hire somebody and then somebody higher up said, no, we're not working on that project anymore. And that whole thing got cut and then they lost their headcount. And so keep that in mind that if it's, you know, like this mid-level, even like to a senior level role, that could happen. If you're talking about people at like the director level, the VP level, which we see this a lot where, you know, when I'm looking at like director, senior director, VP roles, those can be up for 6 months, a year, sometimes a couple, like people, they will keep looking. I think what happens there a lot of times is that I think sometimes there's some trauma, right? Maybe they had somebody who they were sure was going to be great or was a big name or was fantastic. And then they were garbage. And now they're like, not just looking for somebody great. They're looking for somebody who isn't like that other person. And they just have a lot of, or maybe they're just a really dysfunctional team and they can't agree on what they need. And if it's this high level role, it's really important. And they're looking for one person, but they all have a different idea of what they really need. When you're talking about, we're bringing in one person and they're going to lead this whole team, you're starting to get into that. Look, we all have the friend or who have been the person who have dated a lot of really nice people, right? Just dated so many great people. And you're thinking, why can't they find anybody to settle down with? And it turns out that there's a lot of reasons why that may be, true, right? Maybe they just like dating a lot of people. That doesn't really apply in this case, but maybe their standards are completely whacked. Maybe they're looking for something that doesn't exist. Maybe they want a unicorn. Not specifically, no. I'm talking about our friend, Shmamy. No. I don't know. I'm just saying, when you're looking for that one person who's going to come in and lead a department, there's a lot of weird shit that goes on that makes it really hard because so much can ride on that. Bringing in a bad hire can really screw things up and cost even more money than just not having somebody there at all. I think people are pretty cautious, especially now when everything is up in the air and confusing. And it's also just really hard to figure out who is qualified for those roles, right? Like, people who've done the role at another company may or may not have anything to do with whether they'd be good at your company. Like I said, I think that there can be a couple of different things that happen here. That oh no, we need to get the perfect person. A little less true with the like junior to mid-level range, unless you're like the only person coming in. They tend to be more willing to take a chance there. But again, all kinds of things happen to those roles. All kinds of things happen to those roles.
The next question we just touched on a bit. Perhaps you could shed light on why I keep seeing the exact same jobs getting reposted every few months for nearly 2 years now. It seems they're either never getting filled or perhaps it's a revolving door situation and new hires are out as quick as they're in.
I can actually give some technical reasons for this. So yes, everything we just talked about before about like why is this one director role keep coming up. So there's that absolutely could be the case. There's some weird technical reasons that it could be happening too. First of all, things can just get reposted accidentally. Shit just gets lost at ATSs and they don't mean to. Other things are, there are companies that are so big that they are just constantly looking for whatever it is, customer service people, mid-level design, like they are just constantly, they will always be looking for those people. And it is a revolving thing. Like they keep posting it because they keep having openings, or sometimes it's a recruiter or a recruiting agency that's posting jobs that look very similar, but are actually for different companies. It's the same company that's actually posting them. So that can happen. The other thing is that if you're not getting the people that you want in, this is like weird inside baseball shit, like on a job board, if you post your job, you get a whole bunch of traffic the first couple of days, and then it falls off the top of the list because everybody else posts their jobs and then it's no longer at the top. So you stop getting applications. So one of the things you can do is you can pay the job board to keep your job at the top of the listings, or you can just repost it in many cases and pretend like it's a new job, and then you get a whole new batch of people. So if you see it posted a couple of times, that may be what's happening, right? They just wanted a few more because they didn't get what they wanted in the first round.
And it occurs to me that you're knowledgeable about this in large part because you used to work at a major job board company.
Yep. Oh, I could tell you all sorts of weird stories about all the kinds of things that people do, but that is for another time because that is all the time that we have for today. If there's a different question or topic that you'd like us to discuss that we didn't get to, please reach out to us on LinkedIn. And by us, I do, of course, mean Amy, because Amy will actually respond to you. We really appreciate the questions that you asked. They're great questions. They're important to everybody. And we love answering them. If you are so inclined, we would greatly also appreciate your support on the podcast. So if you like the show, please subscribe and leave a rating or review. If you don't like the show, why the hell are you listening? Once again, I am Laura.
And I'm Amy.
And we want to thank all of you for listening. We wish you all the best of luck with your search, no matter what you're looking for. We are rooting for you.